Awaken Your Alpha.
Episode 23, Christopher Browning.
Welcome. Check out this fantastic podcast, the Awaken Your Alpha podcast. Live limitless. Tracking down the finest alpha minds on the planet for you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Words they live by. For example, put the cookie down. Origins, biggest failures, fears, awakening moments, Yoda questions, yin yang, the alpha round, and their wake-up question to finish. Get to the podcast!
I'm here today with Christopher Browning. Good afternoon. Well, it's evening there for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's about 8:30 in the afternoon, okay, or in the evening.
So Christopher is speaking to us from Vietnam, and the first thing you know, this man is definitely, he's ready to awaken the alpha within you guys out there. I'm going to pass it over to Christopher if he can give you, if you can just give us a brief introduction, sort of a little background about yourself, sort of your origin, and let us know what you're up to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be glad to. We could go way, way back. I started off as a math computer science major. I ended up getting a math degree, and then I said, you know, what the heck am I going to do with that? And so I double majored in computer science, and then I ended up programming for a while. And then I just hit this, I got this sweet job. I couldn't ask for a much better of a job after graduating from college. And I ended up working at the research and development department in McAfee antivirus. And so it was kind of like the best, the cream of the crop type place that you get as a programmer, because we had an unlimited budget. We could come and go as we wanted. And we could think up anything we wanted and create it. That's basically what they hired me for, was just to say, come up with ideas that would, you know, prevent so we could scan viruses and catch them. And ended up.
How long ago was
just
that?
2000-ish when that happened.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was a while ago. I had graduated from college. I'd already traveled the world a little bit, and then I taught English in Japan for a while, and came home, and then a few jobs here and there. Anyway, so that was the first real significant corporate job that I had, and I just found myself. I started coming to work, and there's this point where I was just so tired and I couldn't understand it. Like, I think every guy kind of goes through the process where he's thinking, like, gosh, this work isn't very exciting, or there's got to be something more in life than this. And I got this weird feeling like I just had a run. And I remember the pivotal moment was I walked outside. And the sun was up, because we worked some really long hours, and I was really excited, because I thought, oh my gosh, I must be going home early. And I realized I wasn't going home early at all. It was just the high point of summer. It just, the sun was staying out longer.
Yeah.
And that was like so depressing to me. I was just like, it's like, I thought I was getting, it's like you feel like you're breaking free from like a change or something for a small time. You're like,
oh, I hate working in the summer.
It's more confirmation that your life is zooming by faster. So I went to my boss and I said, hey, man, nothing wrong with the company, nothing in my job. I just got to go. And my boss was like, well, you know what? We really like you. And after some hem and a hawing, he basically came back and said, we love you so much that, tell you what, if you work 3 days, we'll pay you for a full five.
Whoa, nice.
And I just said, I felt like an idiot for not taking it. I said, okay, well, maybe they'll give me some space to kind of like find that rejuvenation time, and I can make circles. Just, who offers that ever? So I said, okay, great, and I took it. But what I found out is that as I was taking that time, it just confirmed more and more that things weren't right. Like, something wasn't fitting. And I could say that's really where I started burning out myself. And so I ended up quitting, and I went into real estate investment, and I kind of jumped around a couple different things. And I was trying to figure out, what do I really want to do? And I noticed something interesting, that I started talking about the problems I was having with the people around me. And I kind of got two interesting responses. One of them was, that's your own deal. That's your own fault, and you need to go figure that out. And they almost talked about like a little bit like animosity or almost like anger at me when I said that, like, dude, you're not man enough to figure this out. You just got to balls up and figure it out.
I like that advice. Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, man, that's just, you know, like, I'm hurt now. And I'm really questioning your things about who I am. And, you know, like, wondering if this is going to be permanent for the rest of my life. And then, so that was the first group of people. And the second group of people were really like this. They were like, man, I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, if you find some answers, come tell me. Because secretly, I'm exactly the same place you are. And I just found that there's these two groups of guys that were acting this way. And what I really found out was that first group was more like the second group. They just weren't to the point they wanted to admit it yet.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like looking for answers to figure out, what does it really mean to be a man and to have a job and to find something that is exciting for who you are? And do we always have to sell out just to make money? And there's got to be a better way. And there's got to be something else better than just like, you know, being the beach bum, where you're kind of like living the life, but you're just barely scraping by financially. Or the other extreme is like, you know, you're this corporate raider that's making tons of money, but you've got no fulfillment.
Yeah, neither extreme has never appealed to me, really. And that's, yeah, that is the problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I just thought, there's got to be a way. So my friend lent me this book. It was called 48 Days to the Work That You Love. And at the time, I was living in St. Louis, and I read this book. It's by Dan Miller. And he just spoke some things that were just like straight true to the heart of like what it means to work, and it is kind of challenging the whole idea of just falling for the routine of a job. He was in Tennessee and he was having this event actually at his house, and through a friend of a friend, I actually got an invitation to it, and so I went to it, and there I met my mentor, who would eventually become a mentor, but we didn't know that.
Some of the questions I was going to talk to you about. I mean, we have almost like, we have our awaken question, like, when did it all start to change? What finally awakened you? I mean, you touched on it there when you thought the sun was out and you was having to go to a job you just were bored of. But then you said you jumped around to a few other sort of professions or tried different things for a little while, a couple of years.
Right.
What finally awakened you? Do you think it was the mentor?
I think it was a big culmination of several things. I'd gone back and I got my MBA. Okay, so I went and got my MBA, and I found out that it was actually worthless. Like, because I was thinking about starting my own business. You know, what do I do? How do I find a job that fits who I am? And so that's where I was kind of in this struggle for a while of, I knew I didn't want to go to corporate land. There was something about corporate land that didn't appeal to me. Jump to a little bit of the chase. I found out that there's actually nothing wrong with corporate land. What it was is that I was in the wrong position. But I didn't know that at the time. I just felt like there's something wrong with like corporate-ese land. So I thought the solution to my problems was starting my own business. And so I went and got the MBA. And when I got the MBA and I left, it's like, there's nothing about my MBA that's going to help me at all launch my own business. And so then I kind of I combined that to these questions I've been asking people. What does it mean to work? You know, what is it? Why does work seem to affect men differently than it does women? Because the other really interesting thing is like I would talk to women. And they would say like, you know, I don't know what the deal is, but you just work. You don't need to worry about finding significance in work. And women seem to have this ability to just kind of like, just work. Yeah, they want to find significance in some ways, but what they accomplish inside of work isn't as personal and meaningful as it is for men.
Do you think that, is the attachment to the ego something to do with that, the male ego, potentially?
I think that's the negative side. There's a part that I really believe is biological, to that the men are supposed to find significance to work. And so, you know, maybe this is where I can jump into it and talk about both sexes really need a type of social approval. And we need to be approved socially. But the difference is that men kind of get their social approval by social status, by the things that we do. So if you walk into a room of people and you get two guys talk to each other, the first question that comes out of mouth is, hey, what do you do?
Yeah.
And we really identify, another guy identifies another guy by what they do. If you talk to women, that's one of the most frustrating questions to women. What do you mean, what do I do? I don't care. You know, why are you trying to identify me by what I do?
Try and pigeonhole them.
Yeah, they want to know, it's like, they really want to know, who do you know? And if you watch women contact, that's how they talk. Oh, I know so-and-so. Oh, you know so-and-so? Yeah, I know that person also. Oh, yeah, you know, I was over here. I know these people. And so women get their social approval by social acceptance. Who are you accepted by already? What groups are you accepted in? And if we kind of look at it in one way, men get their approval by going up in rank. Where am I in the status of other men? Women want to know, what groups am I involved in? Who am I included in with? And we can also do this on a different level. Like, when women really get into trouble, what do? They immediately go to their girlfriends and start talking. Hey, I got this problem. And they find they have an instant ability to reach out and make community happen for them. And for men,
I know what you're going to say on this one, yeah.
Just we don't
bottle it up generally. Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of hold in and we don't do it. It doesn't mean that's necessarily the healthiest thing for us to do, but if we kind of think of like on a biological level, that if we're trying to gain status, if we show our weaknesses too much to the wrong people, then we're in trouble. Somebody will take advantage for us. Women, on the other hand, actually, if you don't start sharing your secrets between women, if they feel left out if you don't share the secrets.
Yeah.
Because then it feels like you're withholding something, and now you're trying to prevent us from, you know, some kind of special information.
Definitely. No, it can be hard for men, definitely. But I think in the long run, once you start doing it, you know, it makes you more real, more approachable to most people, because, like you say, we do sometimes put a front on us trying to attain this status, but, you know, everyone is a work in progress, and we all do need help at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Linking to that then, I'm just going to jump into the Yoda question then that we got here.
Sure.
Who helped you awaken your alpha? You started to touch on that about a mentor who became your mentor. Can we hear a little bit about that?
Do you mind if I just go back
really quick? No, definitely.
So I was noticing there's a difference between social status and social approval between men and women. And I was just like, gosh, some of these things started coming together. And so I ended up going to this event, and there's this guy named Chuck Bowen there. And he was a small business coach. And I was just saying, you know, I'm trying to figure out what I was going to do for coaching. I knew that I wanted to be a coach, but I couldn't figure out exactly what I wanted to be a coach for. And I ended up becoming COO of a company called Free Agent Academy. And it was a group of entrepreneurs getting together. We would have these meetings, about quarterly meetings, where everybody would come together. So you could think of kind of like a large networking group about networking / a personal development / business development group, where it didn't matter what level you're at your business, we would come together and we could hammer out. If you had an idea, we would help you hammer out the idea. If you didn't have the idea, we'd help you figure out what you wanted. And so Chuck was one of the mentors on there. I ended up talking to him one day, and Chuck was known for making people cry. Yeah, cry in the right way. And he never like would yell at you. He would just ask these questions in such poignant ways. It just felt like a knife going straight to your heart.
But it was like the best mentors.
Yeah, it was like the kindest knife ever, right? It was just like, man, if I don't tell you this, nobody's going to. And I care so much about you that at this one point, he just says something, and it just stabs me deep, and I just start bawling. And like, I can't even figure out why I'm crying. I'm just like, you know, and I'm just crying. And then he just goes, Christopher, why don't you just come to my house for a couple of days and let's just work this all out. He's getting somewhere between $500 and $1,000 an hour. And he says, why don't you just come to my house and spend a couple hours hanging out with me, or every couple of days? And I was just like, I can't accept that gift. You know, at the time I was so broke. I can't afford it. And like a true mentor, he he says, because we both share a faith, and he goes, if God were to offer you this gift, would you reject it? If he was gonna hold, you know, like a cup of gold in front of you,
yeah,
would you reject it? Because he said, and because you thought you weren't worthy of it, or because you couldn't pay for it, you know. And I was just like, you know, like I almost was like, you asshole! You're like, how dare you? This perfect logic that I can't.
This dude deceive. Wanted to help you bad. This is good.
Yeah, and I'm just like, my Yoda came from was that he just said, come on out, and we just end up bonding over a couple things, and you know, now we still spend about an hour a week talking to each other about all the companies he's running, the things that I'm running. We'll talk about the books that we're reading back and forth, and
we're gonna get to your books definitely. Right, yeah. we're gonna lighten this up then. We're gonna do a little quick fire round. This is a yin yang round. Okay.
Okay. So
beer or wine?
Oh, beer. Dark oh, yeah. beer, for
good,
sure.
Good man. Okay. Home-cooked dinner or eating out?
Most likely home-cooked dinner.
Okay. San Francisco or New York?
Ooh. I'm a West Coast dude. I'm going to have to go San Francisco. I tried to live in New York. Couldn't do it. I'm too slow-paced for New York.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Okay. Vietnam or where is your hometown?
Oh, yeah, you know what? I love my hometown. Eugene, Oregon.
So if I come to visit Eugene, I should?
Oh, you got to go to the Oregon Country Fair, which is like the, it's like all the remaining hippies in the world descend on this one small area, and it is half nudity, dope smoking.
You said you're into ass, West Coast
like,
stuff.
Dancing and like, you know, artists coming in thinking they got the best stuff ever, and you just kind of step up going like, yeah, man, that's really original. Okay, like weird hippie music, but everybody just loves each other. It is the one of the most fantastic weird things you'll ever experience in your entire life.
So we're going to get into now some of your alpha tools.
Okay.
What are your favorite or any books you could recommend that maybe you're currently reading or you've been into recently? Favorite books for either like your body, business, belief, balance?
You know, one great book I think every guy should read is called MindOS, and it's by Dr. Paul Dabrowski. You can just look him up as Dr. Paul, and he spells the whole name Dr. Okay. Paul. And it's kind of the unification theory of psychology. But the way that he does it with a couple pictures of things, it just makes you understand everything. Like,
that like sounds good.
How you think, how society works, why people act strange ways you do, how do you generate self-confidence that's guaranteed every single time? What do you do when you get angry? How do you psychologically turn your anger into something that is a win-win? What do you do when you get depressed? You know, like, how do you even when you're depressed, and how do you move your state of depression into something that is what we call self-efficacy, which is so important for us guys to know that, you know, I'm going to swear a little more, that we can get the shit done.
Yeah.
What do you do when you feel like I'm stuck and I don't know what to do?
Well, that sounds good. Well, I've got something out of this podcast today anyway, because, yeah, I've never heard of that one.
And then, where's the Wild at Heart? That's a great book for guys. Talks about
who's really that by?
Eldridge, John Eldridge.
Okay.
That book's about really kind of following your passion, about the wildness inside of us, and how do we take the wild part of our masculinity and channel it in such a way that it becomes something inspiring for the men around us, and also beautiful and captivating for the women that are in our life.
I like it. What would you say would be, you know, a productivity resource for you, or, you know, maybe one of your personal daily habits that helps you sort of get to the lifestyle you've got to?
One of the things that I always tell my clients when I'm working with them is you got to generate small wins. The big myth is that we get these big wins in life, like you closed the big deal. Or, you know, you got the new job, or, you know, yeah.
Put your feet up for 6 months.
You got the big raise, right?
Yeah.
And it's this big, huge, terrible myth that is out there that's what we hear. And it seems those are the things to celebrate, but really what it is, it's tons of small wins that are built upon each other. And when you start feeling down, you got to go generate small wins. And it is ridiculous. It sounds like if you're starting to get depressed and you're like, gosh, I just don't feel good. And you start replaying those terrible tapes inside your head, like, doesn't feel like I'm anything right now. You simply got to get up and like, all right, I'm going to go walk around the block. Because yeah. I haven't walked around the block this week. And that's a small win. And you think, and you sit there on the couch and you think, like, if you're listening to this, you're like, that doesn't seem like it's anything. That's like, that's crap. Go do it. Just say, like, I'm going to go walk around the block because I told myself I wanted to walk around the block. And it does something so completely weird psychological that you go like, you know what? I can do the things that I tell myself to do. Because where we get really depressed is we think, I can't do that big thing. That big thing that I'm trying to accomplish, it seems to be impossible.
Yeah,
I can't get it.
You can't do anything, yeah.
Right, and then it's like, now I can't do anything. So you got to generate the small wins.
Brilliant. Okay, have you got for us a high-tech resource and a low-tech resource that you use?
The best low-tech resource I got is a small, like, three-inch by two-inch notebook.
Oh, I'm with you
on that. I have got the attention span of a gnat. I don't remember things. Notebook and paper. As soon as I got an idea, it's got to go down in there. If there's something I do, I got to go down there. And then now all I have to remember is the notebook. That's it. I have a very specific iPod. I don't use my iPhone. I don't use anything else to play games, but I have an iPod, and I load it up with tons of educational material.
Oh, and it's priceless, priceless.
Getting that information inside my mind where I'm thinking new ideas is so important.
We going off the point a bit. Do you drive a motorbike out there?
Yeah, it's a they're like more like scooters.
I was just gonna say I had New Year in Vietnam. Blimey, it must have been 2007, and it was ridiculous. Obviously people die on bikes, but it must have been like 11 or 12 bikes across the road, and it was just a melee of just carnage.
Yeah, it's like a school of fish.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the way they drive. Yeah, it's just like merge.
Yeah, forget about right of way. It's just,
yeah.
You've got to learn to flow with everything. Absolutely. And I was so maddening at first when I first got here, because I was just like, what are you guys doing? You're coming into my life.
Yeah.
And now I just kind of drift with everybody else.
Yeah, I got a lift. I think there's about four of us on one of them bikes around New Year, around 12 o'clock. Yeah. I'm just glad I'm not dead. But yeah, it was good fun. All right. I mean, it doesn't sound like much, but was there anything holding you back, like back in the day?
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think this is something that everybody struggles with, is that I really believe that there are certain jobs that we were created to do. A lot of us live under the false pretense that we can do everything. America loves at least in America, we have this big mythology that you should be able to do everything. And I've more than convincingly come to understand that we can't. People have very specific things that they can do. What are you uniquely designed to do? And once you start working inside of those gifts or talents, you will start making far more money, you will have more meaningful relationships, and work starts to become a joy. If you're kind of born with a natural ability to do something, say like running,
yeah.
It would be ridiculous for me to come up and say, I'm now going to make you a tree climber. And if I try to make you say, you've got to be good at climbing trees, what you're going to end up doing is spending all your time trying to improve tree climbing, and you're going to be a pretty good runner because that's what you naturally are, but you're never going to excel at running. You're never going to become like the best runner. And that's what we really do in a lot of careers. It just opens up the door. Like, I cannot tell you how many opportunities just come to me because I say, this is what I am, this is what I do.
Well, just knowing else. That is not common, you know. And like you say, people spend so much time trying to fix all of their weaknesses, even if it's not really essential what their life's path is going to need, you know?
Yeah. That's exactly right. So that's right. Mostly what my coaching is about, is just helping guys understand.
I love my quotes. So I was going to say, what would be like an awaken your alpha type quote, or a quote that you like to live your life by?
Fly your freak flag, which means, you know, everybody's a little bit of a freak in some ways. And you that. Are going to...
I thought you said fly your free flag. It's the freak flag.
No, freak like flag. It. Freak, yeah. F-R-E-A-K.
Yeah,
so fly your freak flag. And because some people are going to hate you, but other people are going to love you for it. And those are the people you want to have around you. And if you don't fly your freak flag, you're never going to know who are the people that really love
that,
you.
That quote is spot on. I like it. I like quotes that are quite short and punchy and to the point. That is good. Right. What would you say is your, again, I don't want to keep you too long, but what would you say is your biggest mistake?
It was becoming a computer programmer. When I was in school, my dad, I told my dad, I think I'm going to be a math major and a computer science major. My dad was kind of like, oh, okay. He was paying for the bills at the time. So yeah. I felt like I just kind of check in with him and say, hey, is this cool? Do you think I'm doing the right thing? And he goes, yeah, you know, that sounds great. And then when I got burned out, I went to him and I said, you know, I'm thinking about going into psychology or like really helping people figure out what they want to do for work. My dad looks at me and he goes, yeah, that sounds more like what I thought you should be doing when you're in college. And then I was just like, what? Why didn't you say something? And then true to my dad's form, he goes, you know, son, you're just so stubborn that you just make up your mind what you want to do and you'll do it. And at the point, you had to convince yourself that you had to like take on this biggest burden of trying to become the best thing, you know, to do something that you had to prove to yourself. And I couldn't tell you otherwise. And so the whole point is I think that's what I would have done. I would have listened more to my own heart and saw the things that I was naturally good at and stuck with that. Damn. Rather than listening to the things around me said I had to be something else than what I felt comfortable in.
This is the wake-up question. So if you woke up and had to start all again with a clean slate this tomorrow, but you still knew, you knew everything that you know now that we've been talking about, what would you do tomorrow?
I would become the number one expert on personalities and then also how it works inside of businesses. I love what I do now in that I can walk into organizations and I can just see where people are misfit. I can talk about where they're having communication problems because they're just communication styles that are different, and then just help them see you guys are actually right on track.
How would that look? I mean, for the first day or first week, if you didn't have any of your contacts, you're starting from scratch, what would be your priorities in that first week?
I would find a business that looks like it's dysfunctional, and I would walk into them and I would say, in 2 weeks' time, I can improve your profits by probably 100%. Let me reorganize your staff and talk about things. Or I can improve your customer service by 100%. Particularly to the small business. That's what I would do. And then I would sit down and I'd say, if I can do all these things, you'll pay me, you know, $10,000 or something. And they would say, unbelievable, sure, go ahead. I'd love to have you work for free. And then I would deliver the results.
Yes, like it. Very nice. Okay. And then just in tying it up, who do you think I should interview next?
Have you ever heard of Trip Lanier?
Nope.
Trip Lanier does... He's the Authentic Man program.
Okay.
He's got his own big podcast. I think you should get on. And I think you're doing Ryan Williams already. I think
yep.
I saw that.
Yep. He's I might hit okay. you up some more. It sounds like you've got some good suggestions. Just to finish, what was the one question I should have asked you, but I didn't?
Just one question I would say is like, what's the biggest mistake men make?
Yeah. Okay. So what's the biggest mistake men make?
Yeah, okay, good. I think the biggest mistake that men make is they give away their power too much. In our society right now, we kind of feel that, in the Western society, that in order to kind of find our place, we have to subjugate or trade our power for approval. And what I'm talking about, this isn't that you're a big macho man and you go out there and you you bully people around. Because really, that's not really truly trading power. That's coming from a position of low power and you're trying to gain power. But the big mistake men make, particularly with women, is that we give away our power to hopes that somebody will like us.
Mm-hmm.
And it may work in a short amount of time, but it ends up devaluating very quickly. And then we have no position or ability to move up.
Yeah.
We're kind of get pigeonholed into one place. And there's so much more I can go into that. But
we could talk all day, man. This is brilliant stuff. Yeah. If people do want to sort of hear more from you, how can they get in touch with you, connect with you?
Just ChristopherBrowning.com. And it's just in the process of going through a major revamp. And then I'm coming out with a new book very soon, which is going to called Bulletproof Resumes. And it talks about how do you
kind of bring
your masculine power into your resume without looking like a douchebag.
Brilliant. Well, Chris, have a good one. And thanks for joining us here today. And it was brilliant. So I'll let you know when it goes live.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on.
Called my end because I remember when I got off the interview with you, we talked about it. I think we mentioned it like before I was recording. And I thought, wait a minute, we got off that interview and you're in Vietnam. You've just been shooting a movie and we didn't mention it. And I was like, man, I need to get better at interviewing because how did I miss that? So, because I haven't edited yours yet, I'm going to cut this in. So Chris, you're not having the average sort of day or weeks at the moment. You've just got off the set of a movie in Vietnam. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. It's so funny that about the movie. Vietnam's kind of a funny, interesting place in that the expat community is really small. And I just actually saw a posting on Facebook, and I kind of live by this motto, go with the decision that makes the best story.
Love it.
If you're going to do something, if I'm going to choose to jump off the bridge and it's going to be an epic story, or as long as it looks like it's not going to kill me, or I want to play it super safe, what am I going to do? It's like, jump off the bridge. You got a story to live. And so I just saw this thing. And I was just like, they just said, hey, would you like to come on? Would you like to be in a movie? And I was like, yeah, whatever. I got the nice thing about my job is that I've got some flexibility. So I said, sure, whatever. And what an experience. So I go to these try-ons, and there's like, I think it's basically all the white guys you could find in Vietnam. And there's a couple black guys too, because they wanted to have, they specifically asked for like white and black guys, because there was a lot of African-Americans in the Vietnam War. So I'm here and I'm lining up, and I don't know if you know that, but I've got this huge handlebar mustache.
It is a beauty.
As you've seen the issues, and it's long and it's big. And there's this requirement that says, like, you have to be willing to get, like, a military-grade haircut, and shave, too. And I'm just like, again, it's like, it's my mustache that I've grown out for, like, 2 years, and I just decided, well, it's a story. How many times am I going to be in a movie? So if I've got to cut it off, I'll just cut it off. No big deal. I can always grow it back.
Did the mo go?
How often am I going to be in a movie? So I do this tryout, this spot, and there's this director, his name, Mark, and he's looking with this very serious Italian face, and I don't have like a lick of acting experience, so I'm doing the best that I can, and he looks at me with this very serious face, and he goes, I like it. He goes, I want to work with you. But I'm not even doing the right Italian accent, so I better just stop it. But he basically says, he goes, don't touch the mustache. I love the mustache. Don't cut it. You will be in the film.
Oh, and that was awesome.
And that was my audition. So basically, I got into the movie because I had this ridiculous mustache. And then, so we had to go put all these clothes on. We had to do like a fitting. And he sees him and he goes, ah, you come here. I have made a special part for you. You are the doctor. He goes, have you seen MASH? And I go, yeah, I've seen MASH. And he goes, do you know Elliot Gould? This is what I want. I want you to be a dope smoking rebel.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, this is the part I want to play. I want you to play. Can you do this? This is what I want. Yes? And I was like, yes, whatever you want.
That is awesome.
So this whole film, like, I'm running around, and I'm kind of like this mini star, because the only thing I got is this mustache. Here I'm in the back, I'm always, like, doctoring something up, and I got, like, I've got, like, literally, like, one line in the whole thing, but I'm seen everywhere.
But that mustache is a star, yeah.
But, so here's something that, you know, I think I would like to tell everybody, which I didn't totally expect. So I just kind of went along for the fun thing. And yeah, I was in. Everybody kind of knew me for the mustache. But what I found out was the experience of meeting everybody else that was there and the opportunities that came because of work and other opportunities just totally blew me away. So I got paid a little bit. But again, you know, I just did it for the experience. Yeah. But while I was there, I just allowed myself to be immersed with everybody. And I ended up getting a couple personal clients from it, just from hanging out. Cool. There. People started asking me questions. But the more amazing thing is that now I was this guy that's on the set, and I kind of got known for doing this thing. And I've actually had a Korean company come up to me and say, we need you to put talent together because we want to do this video shoot. And I'm just like, where the heck did this come from? Because, like, I'm not in the film industry.
I was going to say, you mean you didn't plan for a Korean film company to contact you? That wasn't in your plan? That's awesome.
And I'm totally upfront. I'm just like, I think you really want to work with somebody else because, like, you know, I don't do this. And they're like, well, could you do it? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I could go back to all my white friends and we can put something together. And they go, that's all you want to do? Yeah, that's what they want. And I'm like, okay, I feel kind of bad. So I'm like, just white guys. But, you know, I guess that's what they want. So yes, now I've got this reputation of like a talent finder. And so like I got like this whole other side business going on now where the companies are coming and they're just
When you need the niche, when you need the English villain or the English cockney hard man, give me a shout. I'm in.
I will. It's like the next I'll put these talent books and I'll put your name in. So you know, here's the motto, be open for anything.
The Awaken Your Alpha podcast. Live limitless, tracking down the finest alpha minds on the planet for you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Just do the little guy a favor, subscribe and review. It'll help get him off my back.